Welcome to Kaput Radio. I'm Martin. I hope I can share some reflections with you today. There will be quite a lot of talk, and it won't stay entirely serious, but in response to the Occupy Everywhere brand and other radio producers' take on it, I like to present some facts many people disregard as boring or irrelevant. Well, for those of you, stop the show now and put on Matrix 7 or some other comfortable and relaxed diversion. For everybody else, I'm going to occupy this following positive thought about a different finance system, which shouldn't prevent you from making yourself a nice hot or cold drink at the same time. So, Mr. Finance, how does your system actually operate? You have your 30 seconds and your time starts now.
Just like that.
Okay. I think that was the best analysis I could do on the finance industry and our understanding of it. So watch your kettle while I put something in front of the actual show.
Greetings to members of the Zeitgeist Movement and Venus Project. We are anonymous. We are all too aware of the attempts at your name people to private army us. This is not a cease and desist message. The purpose of this message is to explain to your groups that we do not use names, and we are not a private army to fight for, or with, names. There are many among us who agree with your named groups about the removal of currencies. Indeed, it is the only solution. However, your names are always in the way of your goals and ideas. There are many who baselessly believe that you are eugenicists or work for other, more elusive named groups, or worse just because of what has gotten attached to your names. Your names also make you appear as a cult when your members simply spam the names instead of the ideas. We are anonymous. We have no names. Our ideology is that of no ideologies, no labels, and no culturally dependent morals. When one is anonymous, one is free and truly only bound by natural law. The same is true of ideas. When ideas are not anonymous, they are shackled and not free. We ask that you truly break free of your ideology of labels and names, become anonymous, and together we will be united as one divided by zero. You and your ideas will both be free. Several of us are seeking to convince the others in the hive mind that removing currencies is the only way to dig ourselves out of this pit we are in. While widely successful, they are but a few in a sea of many, and there are also the die-hard doubters. More is needed to break free. If you do decide to become anonymous, know that you should not use names. Don't use any proper noun of any group or idea or person, because names can be divided and conquered. Names can be slandered, destroyed, and trolled. Ideas cannot. Remain strong, remain knowledgeable. We are anonymous. We are legion. We do not forgive, we do not forget. We're expecting you.
In my view about divisions and percentage points quoted for occupiers worldwide, you know, the 1% versus the 99%, I like to put myself with the 1% who stand on the shoulders of more than 2 billion people who are not even counted. So much for silly posters and slogans. But all the real concerns people express seemed coalesce into an unspoken but felt want for a narrative to emerge for change. So, here we go with my little rave. That means back to my idea about money. Why? Finance is governing the economies. The economies are forced to adapt to every whim of financial decisions. What are the economies? They are us, people, and the living planet. Is the planet blue? Yes, but it is actually turning grey, and that should alarm everybody, and increasingly it does. When industry leaders, governments and academia tell us about a finite planet for over 50 years, one wonders, why we haven't taken any steps to stop the demise with our environmental exploitation and ultimately with our own well-being. Why has no one asked how to stop the financially driven expansion of the economies despite dire consequences for everyone? Why does this finance system need growth beyond any real worldly needs? If we can't see the reason for mandatory expansion in the finance system, then we cannot expect to find the answer for the real world. So, there are a number of bad real-world circumstances I like to address, but I'm coming from the other end. And it will be quite positive and refreshing for us all to absorb, I hope, as others, as Richard C. Cook, can help us with freshening up on a few historical facts.
My name is Richard C. Cook. I will be proposing solutions to the huge economic problems facing our country that you may not have heard before. This is because almost everyone in an established position, including economists, media commentators, and government officials, is only trying to put patches on a failed system. Very few are advocating fundamental change, but I am, and so are many reformers around the world. I am going to tell it like it is and think outside the box. So I hope you join me and listen with an open mind. Because if we want ourselves, our families, our communities, our nation, and the world to survive this crisis, we must become informed and active. Not tomorrow, but right now. I now want to talk to you about the U.S. economic and monetary system, about what has happened to cause the problems we are facing, and about what can and should be done to change the system. Because it's the system that's at fault, and the system that must be changed. There are other ways to create money that are more conducive to our common welfare and control of the money supply by the banks. In fact, as a former U.S. Treasury analyst, I can tell you that if Congress approved, the government could create all the money our nation needed without borrowing and with much less taxation. Such change is critical because the debt-based monetary system run by the banks is the underlying cause of today's crisis.
The kind of money I want is not created from asset, but from real-world value. And that means I want my money not to be gambled into existence on behalf of someone's prosperity, their house, property, the environment, or any profit expectation. I want my money to represent the real-world value of goods and services we can create and produce and consume. That doesn't require profit and competition at the expense of someone else. Moreover, the money stays in circulation, since it is not a conventional loan having to return to the bank which cancels this money then out of existence. And that means that very little new money is required to add over time. Hoarding this kind of money is absurd, since its value is limited by the market's capacity to provide goods and services. It also means being a stable currency which doesn't need any inflationary growth. The only growth will be a reflection of our natural biological growth, which is way less than we presently have to grow to comply with the immutable laws of debt finance. My money will not compel me to trade if I don't want to. I don't need to obtain profit with my money, therefore I don't need to fight wars over other markets. In fact, I don't need to export or import anything at all if my circumstances allow. And if not, I am free to arrange with others for what I like to import and or export. My money doesn't need to take away anyone's property or workplace. The money I like to have must be able to help the poor, the weaker, and disadvantaged in real terms, and that means it should provide the means for those people to help themselves, which presently the IMF and World Bank as financial lockout systems especially prevent. Structural crime, lethal violence in disguise as poverty, and corruption as a dysfunctional hunt for power would easily dissolve in a society where people would have a great interest to wish the best for their neighbor, as this ensures their own best well-being. Finally, my money can effectively be used to transform toxic and polluting industries with sustainable and more benign processes and repair the ecosphere of our planet. My money's limits are the sustainable limits of the environment, the available material resources and human skills. There is no scarcity of funding with my money. We finally can devote some time for our education and cooperative style to raise our human potential and start building a truly civilized society. So remember, my money doesn't need to gamble away the planet to create currency. It doesn't require profit, competition, and other unethical behavior for survival reasons. It represents real-world value and stays in the marketplace to be accessible for trade again and again. The money supply doesn't need to grow, and therefore doesn't need economic growth beyond a natural biological expansion. My money doesn't need to overproduce and waste precious resources. You don't need to steal my money, since you can simply apply for a sum of it for your trading purposes with a simple accounting system.
All the colors that make us foes, from the same brush the paint does flow. And the colors that make us red are the colors inside our heads.
I stood at the bridge, looked across the border, saw that it was just drawn on, really water. On the other side seemed the grass was greener, but the face staring back shared the same demeanor, huh? When we're warring, the same old story, only twice as mean. Our face is dirty, can't shake the herd, and both grew from the same seed. The wind carried the fruit to different sides, shared the same face but seen with different eyes. The sun and the moon rise at different times, occupying the same space in distant skies. A thinly disguised and reluctant fighter, and the struggling only pulled the knot tighter. Until the desire to draw blood had dried up, until the lengthening shadow said time's up.
We will clash and we'll collide.
Now, your name is Ty?
Ty, yes, that's my name, Ty.
Hi, Ty.
Hi.
Hi. Is there a surname, Ty?
Yeah, Marchezon.
Ah, Ty Marchezon.
Yeah, bet it does.
Okay, Ty, your special subject tonight is the global economy.
That's correct, the global economy. Good
now,
evening.
Now, before we start, would you like a cup of tea?
I'd love a cup of tea.
Okay,
yeah,
terrific.
Love a cup of tea.
Let's
That'd
have a
great.
Cup of tea before
cup
we start.
Of tea would be
very
fantastic.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Now, we've had a few austerity measures. Unfortunately, we're going to have to pay for it ourselves. But
I don't mind paying for a cup of tea. How much?
800 million.
800 million?
Yep.
800 million for a cup of tea?
Yep.
800 million? How can a cup of tea possibly cost 800 million?
Well, you don't want milk with it, do you?
No, I don't take milk.
No, it's extra with milk.
How can a cup of tea possibly cost 800 million?
Well, the tea actually doesn't cost 800 million. There's just extra costs around everything.
Extra costs? What costs?
Well, the bank for the company we get the tea from lost a lot of money during the crash, you see.
But you're not paying a bank that your tea company got money from, surely?
No, but they've got to get it back somehow, obviously.
All we want's a cup of tea. So what are we doing paying for a bank?
No, but the tea people can't run their business without loans from the bank.
Yeah, but you're not paying a loan for a tea company to borrow money from, surely?
No, but we've got to give the money to the bank so they can make the loan.
Forget about the cup of tea. Sorry, I've stopped wanting a cup of tea. Let's just get on with the questions. I don't want a cup of tea.
Well,
thank
I thought you.
You
wanted a cup of tea. That's
I
all.
Did want
Sorry.
A cup of tea, but not if it involves giving money to banks.
Okay, that's 900 million then.
What is?
Not having a cup of tea.
Not having a cup of tea is 900 million.
Yeah.
Well, it's cheaper to have a cup of tea.
Well, that's why I offered you when I was trying
to save
money. Oh, well,
thank you very much. This is very good.
That's
I see okay. You were protecting me from a worse fate.
Yes.
It was very nice of you.
Ty, would you like a biscuit?
I'd love a biscuit. Thank you.
No, I'm only joking. We're not going to bail you about yet.
Are we going to be a minute?
Yeah.
Could somebody go down and put a couple of trillion in my parking meter? We could be a minute.
How long will the downturn last? No one knows. What is not being done or even discussed is the type of profound structural change that would come about if the government moved to take control of the nation's monetary system. The only way this could happen would be if the people, us, demanded it in a loud, clear, and unified voice. Real monetary reform should go well beyond the government simply buying equity in the banking system in order to take toxic debt off the hands of the banks. Real monetary reform would eliminate the bank-run, debt-based monetary system altogether, and would be bitterly opposed by the financiers and their political supporters. But it should be done nonetheless, and it should be done now. Otherwise, though the government is starting to play a much larger role in the economy, the monetary system, with the banks in charge of money creation, will be the same as before.
Did you know that Benjamin Franklin produced and used this kind of money during the early period of the 13 American colonies? Let's have a listen to an excerpt of an earlier clip I found here with Richard C. Cook quoting him.
It is obvious by now that central to the disaster our nation is facing is the failed banking system. It is not our producing economy that has failed. The economy of our nation and the world has the capacity to produce the goods and services everyone needs to live. Our nation was created through a monetary revolt against the bankers of Great Britain. Around 1750, Benjamin Franklin wrote that it was impossible to find a happier and more prosperous population on all the surface of the globe. Traveling to England to represent Pennsylvania, Franklin was asked why the colonies were so prosperous when there was so much poverty in England. Franklin replied, "That is simple. In the colonies, we issue our own money. It is called colonial scrip. We issue it in proper proportion to make the products pass easily from the producers to the consumers. In this manner, creating ourselves our own paper money, we control its purchasing power, and we have no interest to pay to anyone." In 1764, the British bankers had Parliament pass the Currency Act. This law prohibited the colonies from issuing their own money. The money supply was reduced by half. Franklin wrote, "In 1 year, the conditions were so reversed that the era of prosperity ended and a depression set in. To such an extent, the streets of the colonies were filled with unemployed." After a decade of economic decline, the Revolutionary War began, not because of the Stamp Act or the tax on tea, which the history books teach, but because of monetary tyranny. Franklin stated, "The colonies would gladly have borne the little tax on tea and other matters had it not been the poverty caused by the bad influence of the English bankers on the Parliament, which has caused in the colonies hatred of England and a revolutionary war."
And there is another quote from history. Abraham Lincoln used this kind of money during the Civil War.
Let us move ahead now a few decades to the Civil War, fought between the North and South from 1861 to 1865. When President Abraham Lincoln entered office in March of 1861, the federal government had no money available to fight the war. But President Lincoln needed a lot of money, and he needed it fast. He went to the New York bankers, and remember, there had been no central bank in the U.S. for a quarter century. The bankers, who were closely allied with their British and European counterparts, said they would lend the government money, but at 25 to 35% interest. This was outrageous. So Congress took a radical but entirely logical step. They printed money and authorized the Lincoln administration to spend it into circulation. The result was the greenbacks, a paper currency not immediately redeemable in gold, authorized by Congress in the amount of $450 million. This raw purchasing power was used to acquire the goods and services that would be produced by the economy to fight the Civil War. The greenbacks proved the government did not always need to borrow from the banks to have money to spend. During the war, in addition to the greenbacks, the government raised taxes and sold war bonds directly to the people, in both cases bypassing the banking system altogether. President Lincoln's monetary policy was cited in Senate Document No. 23 from 1865 in the following words. The government should create, issue, and circulate all the currency and credit needed to satisfy the spending power of the government and the buying power of consumers. This was exactly what Jefferson had said half a century previously. The citation continued. The privilege of creating and issuing money is not only the supreme prerogative of government, but it is the government's greatest creative opportunity. By the adoption of these principles, the long-felt want for a uniform medium will be satisfied. The taxpayers will be saved immense sums of interest, discounts, and exchanges. The financing of all public enterprises, the maintenance of stable government and ordered progress, and the conduct of the Treasury will become matters of practical administration. The people can and will be furnished with a currency as safe as their own government. Money will cease to be the master and become the servant of humanity. Democracy will rise superior to the money power. Lincoln's policy pointed out that the issuance of money by representative government is the key to economic democracy. This statement was the most advanced summary of the principles of a democratic monetary system ever made. It was the perfect expression of the principles of a greenback system. Had this system been fully implemented as the basis for public finance in this country, American history would have been far different. But it was not. The U.S. government printed and spent into circulation the paper money known as the greenbacks. This was revolutionary because in European warfare, the governments always would end up deeply in debt to the bankers. This is how the system works. It is a remarkable fact of history, but this did not happen to the United States during the Civil War. As if in response to President Abraham Lincoln's wish for the people's government to control its own currency, the London Times wrote in 1865, "If this mischievous financial policy, which had its origin in North America, shall become a fixture, then that government will furnish its own money without cost. It will pay off debts and be without debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous without precedent in the history of the world. The brains and wealth of all countries will go to North America. That country must be destroyed, or it will destroy every monarchy on the globe." What an amazing statement. It shows how powerful the greenbacks were in freeing the United States government from the power of the banks. We know that Great Britain, home of the Bank of England, sympathized with the South in the Civil War. President Lincoln was assassinated on April 14, 1865, by John Wilkes Booth, who had recently paid a visit to the British-controlled city of Montreal. There, Booth received money from Confederate agents, which financed his conspiracy. Otto von Bismarck, the great Chancellor of Germany, was reported to have said in 1876, 12 years after Lincoln was assassinated, "The division of the United States into federations of equal force was decided long before the Civil War by the high financial powers of Europe. These bankers were afraid that the U.S., if they remained as one bloc and as one nation, would attain economic and financial independence, which would upset their financial domination over the world. By the victory of the North in the Civil War, the Union was preserved. For now, the financial powers of Europe were thwarted, but they were to have their revenge." Another president who understood the necessity of having the people's representative government, not the bankers, in control of the money supply was James Garfield, elected in 1880. And also killed by an assassin's bullet in 1881. Garfield was a Republican in the mold of Lincoln. Just before his death, Garfield said, "Whosoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. And when you realize that the entire system is very easily controlled, one way or another, by a few powerful men at the top, you will not have to be told how periods of inflation and depression originate." Garfield knew, as did others at the time, that inflation and deflation, booms and busts, were monetary phenomena. The banks benefit when prices go up because their interest earnings soar. When prices fall and people and businesses go bankrupt, the banks and the rich buy up their assets for pennies on the dollar. But by controlling the currency through a system like the greenbacks, the government could moderate financial crises. So after the Civil War, the bankers tried to get Congress to retire the greenback currency. Congress, however, knew the greenbacks were the best money the country ever had. They were not inflationary. They allowed the government to pay a portion of its wartime expenditures without debt, and they were widely acknowledged as having saved the Union. So the greenbacks remained in circulation, with the Supreme Court upholding their constitutionality. As late as the year 1900, the greenbacks still made up close to a third of the nation's circulating currency. During the latter part of the 19th century, the U.S. had gone through the most explosive period of economic growth in human history, again, without a central bank. The monetary system. The system is all-pervasive. It determines the actions of every person, everyone, including businesses, individuals, and governments.
Yeah. True by nation. Alpha mama, work for your money. I used to live a little more carefree, fairly aware of the trap that wouldn't snare me, fairly aware of the penny till the penny dropped, fairly suited for suit, so I did any job. From a short stint in the clown thing, studying accounting, to see your mental health plus wealth wasn't amounting. Mentality amended, I thought the race ended. Like, what's the point of cash if you're too old to spend? But just scraping by is no way to die, so why face the time and not change my mind? I jumped in the right race but wait behind. I got dusty coals, I'll make them shine. I'll take sour grapes and I'll make them wine. You know life's short, so I'm taking mine back. But as soon as I think that I'm on track, I realize that I'm right in the wrong spot.
So you work for your money.
Spend all your money.
I don't need to be rich.
course, all the examples show specific features due to the competition from private banking and didn't succeed against fear and propaganda-driven interests. Today, hired finance, a more accurate term for what borrowing really means, is the dominant money on the planet. And only through engineering a profit with this hired finance can we access any goods and services and actually have a market. Before moving on, let's clarify for the understanding that this kind of money is not the same as created in public banking, which still needs assets to convert to money, thereby making profit-seeking mandatory, even without interest charges attached. That still causes the effects of scarcity. And it has to be far more universal and globally accepted than local scrip currencies around the world, which in principle are of the same model but cannot prevail while debt finance is still in place. So, how do we get from here now to there and then when? Many questions arise. What do I have to lose? What about my property? Some of the knee-jerk questions. Well, nobody needs to lose anything for a start. The new global money doesn't represent power, asset value, or any speculative means at all. The only power it has is its real-world trade capacity, which only arises in the actual transaction. Thereafter, the money stays in people's pockets and has no value until the next transaction. My money system needs good accounting, which can be done with computers and the internet. I like to think that the new global money doesn't require any violent revolution or massive changes. We don't need to smash the joint, folks. All the sensible things we do will still be done. The unsensible or insensible things we fade out since the market decides that being of no value to anybody. People will quickly recognize that their best ethical behavior actually pays off. So, we often are caught up in our own condition, competitiveness, and we try to find adversaries we like to blame, find culprits, and have to fight enemies. We are so convinced that what people call greed or greedy behavior is answering everything, but it doesn't. When someone acts unethical because they see no other way of surviving in a system where survival comes down to one thing, access to money and winning a deal or perishing, and winning means someone else has to lose. Now let's think once more about greed and greedy behavior. Can you see my point? Why morality cannot help to solve the flaw of the system? If you think they are greedy, whoever they are in your view, it is also you who is greedy then. Because everyone who is now 7 billion people on involuntary participants of this system, we all must survive under it. Enough. You heard anonymous message for Zeitgeist and Venus Project. Follow us. Excerpts of Richard C. Cook's video lecture, Public Credit, The Solution. Music by The Herd, Atmos, and True Vibe Nation. Vibe Nation, one word. With Work, Work, Work. Check out your insight that a banker under the system must also succeed and survive with all the pitfalls and unethical bends we see. So, there we go. I'm Martin, and you can catch me next time. You can check all the web details at kaputradio.libsyn.com.